the time. But she was a super filly. I mean, she beat the boys. She went long on many occasions, winning the Black Eyed Susan, not with me, but with other riders. She was a cheap purchase, $7,500 from one of the sales, I think they paid for her. And two different trainers had her. Initially, I believe Rex Ladd trained her initially. She started in Colorado, I guess Centennial or one of the tracks that out there. She broke her maiden at Fawner Park. You know, nothing special was ever thought of her.
Wow.
She was not something that was supposed to be a great horse. And then all of a sudden, she just snuck into the media by some of her performances. And one of her best performances before I rode her, I mean, she won the Black Eyed Susan. She won other races. She won the Vagrancy. Well, guess what? She came out of the race with a cracked cannon bone. And that's when they put two screws in her cannon bone. And I used to feel the screws when I'd go in there. You know, I'd go in there and I would always play with her in the stall because she was kind of a filly. She would act like she was going to bite you, never bite you. She'd act like she was going to rear up, never rear up and strike you. But she was fun to play with. And as soon as I go feel them two screws, because you could feel them, you know, they were sticking right out into the hide on her cannon bone. You could feel the two lumps. And you'd think, boy, you know, how does she do this after having two screws put in her? And I started working her as more or less a test pilot, because they didn't know if she was really, they felt she'd make it back to the races, but they didn't know what she was going to do. And when I worked her as a test pilot, she was entered one day at Keystone, and I think Georgie Velasquez was going to be named on her, but he couldn't come. He was riding some good horses in New York. He wasn't going to come for an allowance race at Keystone. So they said, listen, you've been working her, you ride her. You know, it's a one-time deal. You'll ride her. I said, man, I just loved, you know, working her in the morning. I didn't gallop her, but I could work her. And she won, like, one of the easiest winners I've had in all the 5,000 winners I've ever been on. She was absolutely just galloping her around there and just playing with the whole field. I think she beat a horse named, well, did she beat Foxy JG or whatever? Just a nice filly she beat, but just galloped, you know, just sitting on her, never cocked a stick, never turned her head loose, just sat there like a bump. So I thought, well, at least I got a thrill of getting a chance to ride, which I thought was the best horse I ever sat on. The next time they had her entered, Georgie couldn't come ride her because he was riding something in a stake, and I think she was in a stake at Parks, Keystone, or it may have been Monmouth Park or Delaware, someplace, you know. And they said, all right, Tony rode her once, he can ride her again. I rode her the second time, one for fun. Then and the owner was a character, you know, never owned horses. That was the first horse I think he ever bought was My Julia, George Weasel, the Radish King. He was called the Radish King, and his colors were green with red chevrons and white red chevrons with radish on the front and the back, big radish. In fact, the third time she was entered, he Georgie couldn't come to ride her because he was riding, you know, good horses at the time. He was a New York star, and he couldn't come. So I rode her one of the tracks. Like I said, it was either Monmouth. I don't have a form in front of me. It was either Monmouth, Delaware, or whatever. And she won. So they said, well, we're going to run her, whatever. The next race they ran her in, they said, we're going to run her here. And Georgie has to come ride her. And he said he couldn't. So they said, so the owner was a real eccentric character. You know, he said, well, you know what? Blacks went on her. I think I won three on her at the time. And I don't need somebody to be slighting my horse or me. You ride her. You ride her, Black. She's your mount. And I rode her, and of course she won. And it was, you know, that's how I got on her, by accident, just because Gene Euster liked the way I worked her. Gene Euster, I was riding other horses for him, you know, and he trained her. And it was an owner's first horse. And he really didn't know the game that well, and he was kind of an eccentric guy. He really was. George Weasel. He was as strange as his name. But he was good. He was good to me, you know, and did some, you know, unorthodox things that he wanted to be done. I can tell you a story about her when she won the Michigan Mile. Did some unorthodox things and was an owner that did it his way, but could be slightly controlled by a trainer, and Gene kept him kind of in control, but not always in control of him. it was just a great experience to be connected with her. She was such a hard trying horse. You know, she everything you asked her to do, she was a Cadillac to not a Cadillac, she was a Rolls Royce to ride in the afternoon. As much as I couldn't get her to gallop in the morning very well for me, which I tried on a couple occasions, you know, I could work her, and she was a baby doll to work in the morning. In the afternoon, she'd go to the post and stand in the gate, like just looking down between the V and the doors, never flinch, never move a muscle, and bang, she'd leave there. I guess it's like the way quarter horses leave the gate. But then two jumps later, she'd be back into your hands and doing exactly what you want. You know, like, whoa, mommy, slow down, let's take it easy, boom. And when you'd call on her, no matter what lead she was on, or if she couldn't even change leads sometimes, because that's just the way she was, she would just go on and accelerate. But I'm so proud that I was on her. But I'm more proud that she gets the recognition that she so deserves. She was such a great filly. You know, wasn't supposed to win some of those races, yet she won. Wasn't supposed to beat Bold Forbes when Angel Corsaro said after he won on him, it'll take a jet airplane to beat me in the Vosburgh. Well, guess what? She was a jet airplane that day because she beat him in the Vosburgh. And she was just a great filly. Steve, when I say I heard her name being inducted into the Hall of Fame, and I was outside when you told me, and tears came to my eyes. And I really want to thank one person who was, I know, instrumental in putting her name in the hat and speaking about her with the same heart I speak about her, Steve Haskins. I know you and I talked about her.
Yep.
But Steve, I want to thank you so much. You know, I'll never be someone even thinking about Hall of Fame for Tony Black, but one of the horses that I can really say deserved to be in there, and you, Steve, you were instrumental in getting her in there, I know, because you put her name in front of everybody and her PPs in front of everybody. I want to thank you so much, Steve. I'm so indebted to you. And there's not a lot of us left that had anything to do with her. But I'm so proud that I can say I was on her, but I'm so grateful that she gets the recognition so deserved. She was a beautiful filly. She was a great competitor and a lovely horse to be around. She never kicked me, bit me, or anything, even though she'd act like she wanted to. I love it,
well.
Steve.
Thank you, Tony. So happy for you and for Craig Perrett, too. And
you can
appreciate Perrett. Yep.
Believe me, I rode with him and rode against him, rode with him when we'd go into Jersey. And he was he did it all. He's got all the credentials to be there. And it doesn't matter how long it took. It's did you get there? And he got there. And he's so deserving of it. And he was a great guy to be around, a good example to be around in the jocks room. Taught the young kids things, you know. If you watched him, you learned. If you listened to him, you learned. And if you didn't, you maybe got a lesson out on the racetrack by him. Because he was a great rider and good rider and knew exactly where you were and where he was at all times. So deserving.
Now, I'm looking forward to a conversation with Perrett. You know, he obviously, you think of the horses associated with his career. You think of Unbridled first and foremost, without a doubt, between the Derby and of course, he wasn't on him for the Breeders' Cup win at the end of the year, but. I just know that when I started betting and was betting big stake races, he was a guy that I just, you know, one of those riders that, you know, you kind of followed and latched onto. Mike Smith these days is thought of as, you know, the money, you know, big money Mike, and those references. Perrett was. Guys that rode him, trainers and owners, they say the exact same thing, that when they knew that they had the horse and that they had a chance in special spots, that he was a guy to reach for, and he would get it done for you.
My second daddy, Walter Reese, who just passed not too long ago, was a real fan of Craig Perrett, And he rode him on many, many horses and winners, many winners. But the only reason I got the ride for Walter was Walter would leave a string of horses in Pennsylvania and a string of horses in Jersey. If you were in Jersey and he could get Craig, he'd get Craig. And I just wound up being like a backup at times, and it was an honor to be a backup to Craig Perrett if he couldn't ride a horse for Walter. But Walter thought the world of him. So it's great to see inductees like we have going into the Hall of Fame this year. You know, even with my Juliet, you know, I still got the colors that the owner told me, keep these colors in your bag. Don't you ever come ride my horse any place and not
have
my colors. So I still got the colors upstairs. So I said, well, I'll keep them in my bag. And the last time she ran, guess where I left the colors? In my bag, my shipping bag. And now they're in my closets right next to all my suits and nice clothes. And I have them in a nice bag. Took them to the, make sure that there's no moss going to eat them. And I look at those colors, those green and red and big red radish on them. And the reason he was Radish King, because he had some process for topping and picking and topping and bagging radishes. He developed this this machine, or so, I don't know what it was. So
that's great. Stories. Well,
I'm going to tell you other stories, but I would keep you on the rest of the morning because there's a story about the Michigan Mile that you'll say, man, you want a Michigan Mile and an eighth. He thought it was a mile. The guy thought it was a mile. But anyway, and I was going from Newark Airport to Detroit Airport every day riding at Monmouth, galloping her, well, it was kind of a gallop in the morning at DRC, get back on the plane and fly back to Newark and ride at Monmouth. And the guy paid me to do that. And you know what he paid me? And it was unbelievable because she won the race and it was $150,000. He gave me, you know, he paid for all the plane tickets and the chauffeur and the room and all that, of course, and then gave me a check for $1,500 every day that I did that. This man was amazing. He was amazing. He was an eccentric. It was his best horse he'd ever had. But he figured, well, this is just another nice horse. I'm going to win the Derby someday. So, you know, I'll forget about my Juliet. But guess what? I'm sure he didn't forget about her. And none of us ever forgot about her.
Well, Tony, you got to get a picture of those silks. And in fact, maybe you come for the induction and you can, you know, I can't imagine how many people are alive that might qualify, but I think you're as eligible as anybody to be presented, as her representative, come August.
It would be a tremendous honor, but if I'm not, I'm going to be there just to see whoever is her representative receive the accolades that she so deserves. I'll probably be there. I don't know exactly when it is.
August 2nd. August 2nd. Clear the deck.
I just cleared it. Guess what? I just cleared the calendar. You know,
I love it.
Other than my demise, that's the only reason I wouldn't be there. And I'd be there. In my own way. Some
that's
other
right.
Reason. But I will be there.
I love
and
it.
I love her. I love that. And thank you so much, Dee. Really. You and Haskin, thank you so much.
Not at all. What Steve did, and we'll talk to Steve Thursday. You'll be back Thursday as well for your regular visit, and by that point, there'll be all kinds of reaction to this news. Very, very cool. My Juliet and Weya both get in as the Historic Review Committee and the Contemporaries, Craig Perrett and Royal Delta, and then the terrific list, again, you know, it'll be a terrific list for a few years. The new pillars of the turf, Ted Bassett, Chris Chenery, Dick Duchessois, Mr. Farish, William S. Farish, the late John Hettinger, legendary James R. Keene, legendary Jimmy Kilroe, Mrs. Phipps, Gladys Mills Phipps, Ogden Phipps, Helen Hay Whitney, Mary Lou, and Warren Wright Sr., Calumet Farm. So you've got really so many of it. Boy, Pillars is right. Look at that list. And Duchessois with us, and Farish, and Mary Lou. That'll be tremendous. They're very special.
Well, congratulations to all the inductees and Craig Perrett and my Juliet, especially close to my heart.
I love it. Tony Black.
Thank you, Steve. Bye.
So great. What a unique opportunity to congratulate Tony here minutes after the news hits that My Juliet among the Hall of Fame inductees, and a total surprise because the early word a couple of months ago from Steve was that he didn't think when they were going to sit down to vote that anything had changed from the last couple of years, that she had, you know, somehow changed a mind or two to get the review committee to include her. But that's a nice pair, Weya and My Juliet. Let's take a break. Probably our last of the morning. This has been a very fast 2 hours and 32 minutes with Darren and with Johnny and Brian Bouye, now Tony, and with Tim Grahams as well to celebrate his million dollar race win with Running to Love You. Graham Motion is going to join us, and Graham has been on a nice roll. A couple of stake wins over the weekend, second weekend in a row that he's sent out a stake win for Mrs. De Tomaso. For Isabel De Tomaso, this one, the older Irish Straight, who is getting long in the tooth, but ran terrific to win the Clark. We also still have to get some of those other Laurel results in, including Always Mining. I'm not going to get to Kelly Rubley today. We'll save Kelly for tomorrow. Always Mining drowned the Tessio, as kind of expected. Las Setas just won. Won a photo, and boy, every time they ran the, you know, the ending and hit the wire, boy, oh boy, I thought that Lasetas had been beaten, but Toledo managed to win that photo. So if she wins the Weber City Miss to get a Black Eyed Susan pass. Quick timeout. Graham Motion joins us next at the races. We're starting the 2 weeks at Churchill Downs. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood fraternities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back. We got about 20 minutes, and we'll spend most of it with Graham Motion. And as we wait for Graham, I want to get you, I'll get you the rundown of the other races from Laurel, since I mentioned the Weber City Miss and the Tessio. The four, or I'll give you three, because two of the results we're going to talk over with Graham. But the Whiteley went to Lecky, and Lecky for Damon Dillodovico ran a huge race. If you didn't see this, Lecky wins by three and change. 108 buyer for Lecky. I've just an explosive performance. And it's funny because I shared that with Damon. And he said, you know, I thought that it was going to be three digits. He said he was shocked a little bit that it was that high, that it was a 108 for Lecky in there. Beats Lewisfield and basically, you know, was chasing him and then took over and under Hector Karamanos wins off. Then there was Dirty, Tom O'Grady's McLean's Music Colt, the Maryland bred, and Maya Engelhart has been taken and done very well with the horses he's been taken to Maryland. And Dirty, kind of exciting if you didn't see the Leatherberry, as always, the big bulky field, the turf sprinters, and by a neck, Vargas gets Dirty from off the pace and pays a nice $13. I got a big fig too, actually, 98. Ms. Locust Point certainly needs no introduction. The cash is king. Now 5-year-old mare. Vargas here too, by a nose, over Carrie Ann with Trevor McCarthy. Carrie Ann for Graham. Then the two races that Graham won. And here's Graham Motion now. Graham, not a bad day at Laurel Saturday, and you're starting to get on a real nice roll here as the weather gets warm.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, hopefully things are picking up. We've had a little bit of a quiet winter, but I think a lot of these horses now are coming back off their layoffs, and it was an exciting weekend for us. Fun to see some of these guys come back, particularly the ones that have been off all winter.
Well, and on that topic, let's also acknowledge that for Mrs. De Tomaso, who, of course, we enjoy so much, and we've talked about for years, even before Irish War Cry emerged, not a bad back-to-back pair of stake wins last week, and then Irish Straight on Saturday to close the card out in the Clark.
No, I mean, Isabel had a great week. She's been really nice to me this week, actually. I was really excited to see these guys come out and run so well. I mean, Irish Straight, I actually I underestimated him. I told somebody who was a 6-year-old, I hadn't realized he's now turned 7. So to come out running like he did the other day was really impressive. And I think on the other end of the spectrum, Regally Irish, you know, stepped up into stakes company, and I thought he ran an impressive race. And you know, this family is very strong. I mean, this mare is phenomenal. She's really turned into a great producer.
Well, and that includes all the way up to Irish War Cry himself. Straight is the brother, the older brother, the 7-year-old gelding, and Regally is out of the sister of Sovereign.
Yes, that's correct. Even the score. So it's a great family.
Well,
Irish score, I'm sorry. Irish score.
Irish score. And between the Jersey bred portion of her resume, of his resume, when you look at Irish Straight, you know, you mentioned coming back for this, for this season. He ran well in that race at Tampa. You actually shut him down after the very good placement in the Baltimore Washington, and you came back for the winter campaign. This was, you know, he didn't even have to run as fast as he ran at Tampa during the winter here.
No, I mean, those Tampa races were pretty brutal, to be honest. The allowance race we ran in was very competitive. He didn't handle Gulfstream. He didn't seem to care for it. I thought his last race in the Tampa Bay Stakes was solid against a very competitive field. I mean, I think he was beaten a length and a half against some of the better turf, you know, older turf horses in the country. So, listen, I was tickled with him. It's fun to have a horse like him who's really, you know, one of the barn favorites as long as he's been around. It's great to see him come out and run so well, and he loves doing it, and he's just a very cool horse to have around.
Well, and you've got plenty of options for him, and I would think that you know, some of the stops you made last year, particularly in Monmouth, you're going to kind of do the same kind of campaign?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I mean, look, obviously the ladies love to run at Monmouth. That's their home territory. So I think it's a course that he enjoys. He likes it. It's a firmer course, which I definitely think helps him.
Well, of course, in fact, it's funny we bring up Monmouth because Tina just, she's home for school this week, and the mail just came, and the season kickoff, the Monmouth press conference next Tuesday at Monmouth to get the season introduced, and it's always right around, it's not next Tuesday, it's the following Tuesday. May 7th will be the kickoff conference. You also, of course, with Dahlia, to win the Dahlia with Secret Message, and talk about this hat trick, Philly, because this was a thriller, the three horses at the wire.
Yeah, so this was a filly that that Brad Wiseboard and Liz Crowe found at Turfway over a year ago now, and you know, I think she's an improving filly. We gave her a little break after she was disappointing I believe we ran her in the QE2 last fall. And then we gave her the winter off at Stone Farm in Kentucky. And had always circled this race as her comeback spot. She didn't go to Florida. She spent the winter up here at Fair Hill. So you always worry a little bit. You've got enough into them to come back in a race like that. But she certainly showed she did. And I was really tickled with her race. I think she's a filly that could be a force to be reckoned with a little bit this year.
Very nice. And with this accomplished and you know, becoming a stake winner, and of course she won the Pucker Up last year. We talked about her at that time. What do you got mapped out? And talk about distance with her, because this was a mile. Are you trying to dial into something in that regard?
I'm not concerned about distance. I mean, I believe she'll go further, but obviously she was very impressive the other day. Look, Ascend, I think he won the Henry Clark the same year he won the mile and a quarter race in at Belmont. So, you know, I think you can get away with shortening these guys up a little bit first time back. There's a couple of ideas. I mean, there's the Gallaret Preakness weekend we could come mm-hmm. back in, but that's a little quick. I think I'd be nervous about that off the big race. There's the Nassau up in Canada, and then there's also the Gamely out in California, which is, I believe it's a mile and eighth.
Well, you might I would imagine, be very welcome to ship out to California and take part in a race like the Gamely. That might be a terrific plan. I mentioned, you heard as you were coming on the air, you probably heard me mentioning that Carrie Ann just got beat in the Primonetta.
Yeah, I think another jump, maybe she gets there. Trevor blamed me. I told him she prefers to run on the outside, and he chose to swing her out at the eighth pole, and I think it might have cost her the race. He said she was running fine down on the rail. So, look, this filly really improved. She just finds that grade one, grade two level a little tough, but I think she could have a big year. We'll probably stick with the match series with her.
And before we talk about some other topics and also some other horses, as we get ready to wrap up at Keeneland and the spring scene switches over to Belmont in New York, you had that first-time North America four-year-old written word. What do you got here, the Mount Nelson filly?
Yeah, I actually thought she might be a work or two short the other day, but the race was coming up very light. It was the first grass race of the year, and you know, I thought she'd done enough to get us started. So obviously I was pretty encouraged with her effort. I think she's going to want to go further. But, you know, clearly I thought the way she did it the other day, and considering she might have been a work or two short, I thought it was a good effort.
How was this horse discovered? What's the backstory?
So she belongs to a partnership with Patrick Cooper, Bill Oppenheim, and Russell Jones, and I think they just felt that she'd be suited to coming over here. And we had her almost ready to run last fall, and she came up with a little issue, gave her some time off. She spent the winter, a good part of the winter, at the Fairhill Therapy Center in the Aquatred and the Saltwater Spa, and came back. And, you know, the timing is good, so with the turf just starting up.
Very nice. Written Word is her name. She's out of a Lemon Drop Kid mare, actually, and her previous start, she was winless in five tries at Dundalk and Navan and Cork, but she had actually kind of run a little bit over her head, actually. I mean, they were running her in some challenging spots, so keep an eye. You certainly have had your share of imports over the years, and Written Word might be one with some upside yet.
No, I think so, definitely, and especially with the fact that I think she probably wants to go further.
Very nice. All right, I'm glad I brought her up. In addition, anything to say about the horses at Keeneland coming up later in the week? I see Trinity in that maiden race. This has got to be Thursday?
Yes, he's in the maiden race on Thursday. He's in the last race, I believe it is. Marnade looks like a pretty competitive spot, but he's a horse who I feel like each time I've run him, he's improved. He was very lightly raced when he came to me, and I think the Marnades will really suit him at Keeneland. He's done well since he shipped in from Florida to Keeneland last week, and he just had one easy breeze over the weekend on the poly track.
Very nice, and has had the two starts at Gulfstream, but you know, getting him up north. This is a horse that Eclipse must have found, and Ron Franklin partnered up the two of them.
That's right. Yes, Aaron found him in Europe, and you know, he took a little while to come around to we could get him to the races, but I think hopefully we got him on the right track.
Well, out of a Manjou mare, and by Mizzen Mast. Nice. So we'll watch for Trinity on Thursday, and you know, I guess on that topic, Graham, since bringing horses over from Europe over the years in recent memory have been, in some cases, to provide an opportunity for horses that can't use Lasix in race day where they were. You and I have talked about this topic off and on over the years. I think back to your participation in the Belmont Park conclave on Lasix. Your thoughts about what transpired last week, and how you feel, and how you're encouraging owners, answering their questions, and how you're suggesting everybody respond, horse players, stakeholders, etc.
Look, it's obviously become the hot button issue. I think it's, you know, I think a lot of people want to say that Lasix is being blamed for the problems in California. You know, perhaps that's the angle that's been used. I don't think that's the truth. I don't think Lasix has anything to do with the problems they've had in California. Having said that, Lasix has been an issue that's been brewing on the surface. And if we really want to get tough about medication in this country, and if the Horse Racing Integrity Act is the way to go, which, you know, a lot of people believe it is, we've gotten to that point, I think we have a problem in that we can't have our cake and eat it. We cannot have no medication but allow for Lasix. And I think that's where we really have the issue, and that's where this becomes a really hot-button issue. And I'm not against Lasix per se, but I am against, I am for stricter medication rules in this country. I think we need to do it. I think we need to do it for the public. I think we need to do it to keep up with the rest of the world. And quite frankly, I think we need to do it for the integrity of our own product. And if the Horse Racing Integrity Act is the way to go, I don't see I don't see anyone really coming up with a better way to handle this. I'm a strong believer that we need a national policy on medication, because being a trainer at Fair Hill, where we run in different states every day of the week, trying to keep up with the medication rules is absurd. And I don't think people quite understand how complicated that is. So I don't like the way we've come back to this issue because of what's happened at Santa Anita. I think it's become a bit of a red herring. But this is where we're at, and I think we cannot bury our heads in the sand going forward, and we need to come up with a solution. And if this is the way we have to go, so be it. LASIX, at the end of the day, is a crutch that we all lean on. I think we'll all figure out how to deal without it. Whether we have to use it to some extent in the morning, maybe that's the case. And I'm sure certain trainers in Europe use it to some degree in the morning. But if we want to have the best product we can, at the end of the day, we cannot be using medication on race day.
Graham, certainly, with your background, although you've been, you've been in North America, how long actually?
Well, I came over here. I finished high school over here, so I've been here a long time. I actually shocked a few people on Twitter last week, showing a picture of my mom galloping.
It was great
on the Oklahoma track.
Tremendous.
I think in 1951, and she told me she used to pass Sonny Fitzsimmons every. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Sonny Fitzsimmons every morning, and he would always say hello to her. And she was one of maybe half a dozen ladies on the track. And she said that she thought Sonny always said good morning to her for that reason, that he felt bad for the, because there were so few girls on the track at the time. So I learned something. My mom's 86, I believe, and I kind of learned something for the first time. But I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, it's a wonderful picture of her galloping in a kerchief too. That part made everybody smile. You worked for Jonathan Shepherd, of course, and Jonathan bridges the era of no race day LASIX. Do you have a set of ready ideas in terms of treating your horses and being prepared, if a young horse of yours should bleed in a race? And some people are saying, that we're all being just fearful about this, and that we can all adjust, and certainly before the LASIX era dawned 35 years ago, people were making accommodation and had treatment plans. What what would you like to tell bettors and the public that we can get over this with some either homeopathic remedy or some old school trainer ideas?
Look, I think, like I said, I think LASIX at the end of the day is a bit of a crutch. I think as trainers, we will figure out a way to deal with it, and that's going to mean adjusting how we work horses. Perhaps we're not going to work them quite as fast because we don't want them to bleed. Perhaps we're going to work them a little further out from the race. I ran in New York when we couldn't use LASIX. I was never a big one about drawing away hay and water. I know you hear that all the time. I think it's probably a little bit exaggerated. I think you make a fair point with the homeopathic medicines that we're going to have to use. And I think, along with not being allowed race day medications or leading up to race day, we have to step up security in the stable area. We have to survey what everybody's up to. We can't have vets coming in and treating horses with other medications leading up to a race, because now we can no longer use LASIX. So I think it comes hand in hand. If we're going to get stricter about medication, we also have to get stricter about policing the stable area.
Does Graham, last question, and obviously we'll revisit this as the as things progress, but one topic that I've been kind of espousing is that it seems figuratively to give a competitive advantage to the most affluent owners and those that can afford the most amount of alternative treatment and going to the hyperbaric and giving the time off as necessary and so forth. What is that, an unfair suggestion on my part?
Look, I probably get chastised for saying this, but I think it is. I think it's something we all have to deal with. Look, to me, it's a privilege to be a trainer. I feel extremely fortunate to have been able to get in this position that I train these amazing horses. I think it should be a privilege to have a license. And I think, you know, we're horsemen. We're supposed to figure out how to deal with things and how to train the horses in a different way. And I think everybody's got to bend a little bit and adjust. And just not throw their hands up in the air and be so horrified. And yes, sure, you could say it gives a guy with a horse that can perhaps use a chamber to help, but the chamber's not a cure-all, the hyperbaric chamber. It certainly helps. And yes, it would give somebody a little bit of an edge, but I'm not so sure at the end of the day that that's a terrible thing.
Well, there's so many moving parts to this, your participation.
Just to clarify, on the hyperbaric chamber, I mean, the hyperbaric chamber is a healing process. It's something that's used to heal the lungs. It's used to heal wounds. It's not a magic cure-all. It's a therapy. It's a way of healing the damage that's done to the lungs, because I think there's a little bit of a misconception there.
Oh no! I mean, there's a lot of positives, and it, you know, it can be used in so many areas that come up. Whatever soft tissue and any other. I mean, anything healing related, but it particularly has a could I assume it's going to be particularly helpful in this arena if. You know, if horses, develop a bleeding issue, and I've talked to plenty of people. I remember having this conversation years ago at Saratoga with Proctor, and when there was a potential for us to go in this direction, and I said, "How would it affect you?" He said, "Well, it won't affect me." He said, "I've seen every top trainer from the last 50 years who." Didn't have Lasix to use. He says, I know what I'm going to do. If I know how to, deal with a bleeder, but not everybody will. And I suppose that's part of, that's part of what a new landscape would be. So we'll take it as it comes, Graham, right?
I think we have to. I think if we want to have the best product and we want to have a product that everybody's proud of, we've got to make a change, and we just have to adjust with the times. Everybody has to adjust, and that's the way life is in every sport.
Absolutely. Graham Motion, everybody, who you should be following on Twitter for all of his views, because he's almost always right. Graham, thanks so much.
I think some people may not agree with you there.
I don't care. If I agree with you, that's what counts. Graham Motion, everybody.
Good to be back with you. Thank you.
Always. Graham Motion. One of our favorites. What a fun morning. Tony Black. Minutes after My Juliet got into the hall. Brian Bouye from the Hall of Fame. Johnny D. Tim Grahams off the Charlestown win. Darren Rogers to invoke Derby Oaks 2019. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, everybody. Good luck if you're playing around today, and we'll talk to you from here tomorrow morning. Thanks, Joanne, as well.